what's happening, man? Hey. This TIP, you know. Hey. I like to dedicate this song to anybody who done ever lost somebody. To the grave, to the streets, to the jail cell. I done been in a situation where I had to cope with all three, you know what I'm saying? I feel like the only thing I ain't done yet is die, you know? But it ain't how I live while I'm here. It's how I live when I leave, you did.
Life's ups and downs, they come and go.
But when I die, I hope I live in the sky. All my folks who ain't alive, hope they live in the sky. Pray to God when I die, that I live in the sky. So when I die, I hope I live in the sky. All my folks who ain't survived, made a live in the sky. Tell God I wanna fly, let me live in the sky.
Guys, you know, it's, I can't believe how fast 20 years went by. I mean, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. And, you know, to be standing here at center court with you guys, my teammates behind me, and appreciating all this, you know, the journey that we've been on. You know, we've been through our ups and been through our downs. And I think the most important part is that we all stay together throughout. You know, I grew up a diehard, I mean a diehard Laker fan. Diehard. I mean, I knew everything about every player that's ever played here. So to be drafted and then traded to this organization, and to spend 20 years here, I mean, you can't write something better than this. And I'm more proud of the fact that not about the championships, but about the down years, because we didn't run. We played through all that stuff, and we got our championships, and we did it the right way. And all I can do here is just thank you guys. Thank you guys for all the years of support. Thank you guys for all the motivation. Thank you for all the inspiration. And, you know, what's funny, the thing that had me cracking up all night long was the fact that I go through 20 years of everybody screaming to pass the ball. And on the last night, they're like, don't pass it. This has been absolutely beautiful, you guys. I can't believe it's come to an end. You guys will always be in my heart. And I sincerely, sincerely appreciate it. No words can describe how I feel about you guys. And thank you from the bottom of my heart. God, I love you guys. And I love you guys. And my family, my wife, Vanessa, our daughters, Natalia and Gianna, you know, thank you guys for all your sacrifice. You know, for all the hours I spent in the gym working and training. And Vanessa, you holding down the family the way that you have. I can't, there's no way that I can thank you enough for that. So, yeah, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And what can I say? Mamba out.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
Down with the King for years, about 10 of them.
And welcome to the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. Happy Black History Month, y'all. We back. We didn't want y'all to think we've gone the way of Medgar Evers or Frederick Douglass, even though, if you believe the president, Frederick Douglass still out here on these streets, so who knows what's real anymore, but yes, we are back with our second show of the new year, and we got a lot to talk about this week. We're, of course, going to recap the big game in the NFL, the finale to the NFL season. We'll also probably chat some XFL real quick, because we are recording on the inaugural kickoff of the XFL 2020. And then in segment four, we're going to talk a little bit about the late, great Kobe Bryant. I can't do that alone, you know. I have to bring in my tag team partner. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce. You know him, you love him. From the City of Angels, it's Marcus. Let's see what is Marcus's Monica gonna be this week? It's Marcus. He hate me Vanderberg. What's going on, brother?
What's up, Nate? How you doing?
Doing good, man. It's been a little minute.
It's been a lot of minutes. It's been what, a month?
Yeah, it's been about a month. Yeah, because the last time we talked, it was like you and I were talking about right before we started recording. It was during the first round of the NFL playoffs.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I've been on paternity leave, and it made it very hard to record during the week, and then the weekends get jammed up. So apologies, but we're back.
I mean, why can't you let young Simba be great? Why can't you put him on the microphone?
You want that audio content in your ears?
The audio content might be all right. It might be like spitting up the rice cereal that I don't know if the people want to see.
Yeah.
On the video.
The video.
So how's everything going with the young king, brother?
He's good. He's already 5 months. He's moved on to eating foods now. He's on to oatmeal. And okay. It goes by fast. I mean, you know, come to think of it, like, it'll be, you know, 6 months in March, and you start thinking about, okay, like, time to start thinking about the first birthday and, you know, all these other milestones that will be here before you know it. So he's doing well.
Good to hear. So, yeah, we're going to have a fun show this week, but Marcus is not the only person on this call. We also have, ladies and gentlemen, coming to you from Sin City. Give it up for the disembodied voice of the professor, Chris Ealy. Chris, what's going on, brother?
Nothing much, man. Just trying to celebrate my birthday this week. And my cousin and another friend who also has a birthday this week, we just came to Vegas. And to quote Murtaugh from Lethal Weapon, I'm too old for this stuff, man. It is I cannot go as hard as I used to go. I just can't.
So Chris, he's saying, Marcus, Chris is saying he's not Jordan in the paint no more. He's like Jordan hitting them fadeaways with the Wizards.
Mm-hmm. The 20-footers.
Well, Chris is here not only to, spend some time with us, because we hadn't talked to the brother in a minute, but he's also here to talk about Kobe in segment four, because Chris was actually in attendance at Staples Center a couple weeks ago when they had the memorial, the tribute for Kobe. So we'll get his thoughts about that evening. But before we get into more of the serious stuff this week, fellas, let's talk some football. So Super Bowl 54, I was trying to remember the Roman numeral. Super Bowl 54 LIV, which fits, I guess, with Miami. They couldn't have planned it any better. Went off. The Kansas City Chiefs defeated San Francisco 49ers 31-20. Pat Mahomes is your MVP, the reigning, defending black, number one ranked black quarterback on the Black Power quarterback rankings. I think we can all make that a statement now.
Yes, and number two would be Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, number two would be Lamar Jackson. Number three
would be...
You want to go Russ?
I would go... Well, have you seen Russ today?
No, what's going on?
Let me share this to you guys on air.
Let's
show you what the number three quarterback is up to in this offseason. I will drop this in the Skype for you guys, and
I know Russ was looking cold at that MVP ceremony the other week.
There you go. Open up Skype.
Right, let's see what Marcus has put here in the group chat. Do you see it, Chris?
Nah, let me see.
You found it?
It's loaded, but I can already tell just by the thumbnail, there's about to be some foolishness. There we go. All right. So what Marcus has sent the group chat is a tweet from Sierra, obviously.
Not that Sierra, the real Sierra.
Yeah, not she who should not be named on this program. That Sierra is busy thinking about Japanese wrestling. This Sierra is thinking about her boo, NFL quarterback Russell Wilson, who is, like, I don't know what this man got on his head, Marcus Vandenberg. What is on his brother's head?
His hair is amazing.
Like Marcus Vandenberg, for those that have seen this man before, maybe you met him at a live audio wrestling meetup, or maybe you've seen him out of the ball game if you live in the Los Angeles area, or maybe you've seen him on the video version of the Patreon show. But Marcus Vandenberg is a light-skinned brother with good hair. But Russell Wilson.
This is A+.
This is next level right here,
next
Marcus.
Next level.
out here looking like he could fill in for one of the dudes off of Shalimar or something.
Man,
like he doesn't even look like Russell Wilson with the way hair is working. I think Chris is stunned.
No, I'm seeing it now, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's I mean, he looks like a black Lou Diamond Phillips.
Damn, you nailed it. That's pretty good.
Oh, and ladies and gentlemen, for those of you on the video version of the show, Chris has turned his camera on.
I'm just trying to not lose the connection.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's going on, brother? Look, Chris over here looking like it's his birthday, you know. You can see, like, I'm trying to look in his eyes, Marcus. What I'm really trying to do is gauge the level of sobriety right now for my brother.
I'm hung over like crazy.
How late did y'all stay up last night?
Like till like 2 in the morning. I had a Bloody Mary this morning, and that kind of got rid of some of the hangover. But that's also like the path to becoming an alcoholic, because you know, more alcohol makes the hangover go away, and that's why I get alcoholics. You know,
when the last time you had a hangover, Marcus?
Never.
I would say for me, it's probably been a good 15 years, maybe. Like,
yeah. Yeah, for me, it would have been about 15 years before this morning. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you who Chris is right now, Marcus. Chris is when, let's see, what's the better analogy? Because I'm thinking of Willie Mays. Who did Willie Mays end up going to play for at the end?
Right.
And he was just kind of stumbling around the outfield.
It was the Mets.
The Mets, yes.
Yeah.
Like, Chris is either Willie Mays with the Mets, or Chris is when... Damn, I'm trying to get him, but it's slipping my mind. Listeners, if you're watching this, who is Chris right now? He's the aged veteran that think he got one more shot left in him, but then it turns out the shots got him.
I'm fully self-actualized that I got no shots.
Chris, look, Marcus, I was trying to think of like a wrestler who came back and was just like, nah, bruh.
MVP.
Damn, that's cold, Marcus. Why you do that, man, like that?
I'm kidding.
A father, you should appreciate he was wrestling for his son.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
That's kind of the thing, though, Marcus. Like, nowadays, we don't really see many athletes. Like back in the 80s, you would see guys trying to hang on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's the opposite. Like, particularly in football, we see guys
trying to get
like
out.
Calvin Johnson, and, like, they peace out before it's too late.
Right.
Yeah, so Chris is out here on his Luke Kuechly grind.
Yes.
On his Greg Olsen, I got one more season left in me. Speaking of seasons, what did you think about the Super Bowl, Marcus? Like, did it pan out the way that you expected to, given the defensive potency of the 49ers?
Yeah, I thought overall it was entertaining. It was definitely better than last year's game, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Mahomes didn't look like himself till the fourth quarter, which I think resulted in a better game. But in terms of a entertainment value, I thought it was pretty entertaining. You know, close game to the end, come back late, and, you know, a superstar was born in Mahomes on a national level.
Like, Chris, I thought this was, like, I predicted Kansas City to win. I thought they would actually win by a bigger margin. So you got to give credit to the 49ers for at least holding them down for three quarters. But, like Marcus was saying, I think the biggest story is we all knew Pat Mahomes could ball, but this was, like, the stamp, right? He already won the MVP last year. He got the ring now. So it's like, I don't want to say everything else after this is gravy, but, like, if he doesn't do anything else for the rest of his career and he turns into Jamarcus Russell overnight, like, he's already set his, you know, he's put his stamp on the game.
Right, yeah, and I was like, I'm a big believer in the law of averages, and I thought that them just, because they've done this before, right? They were down and, you know,
they were down in all of the playoff games, yeah.
Yeah, and have come back, and I was like, okay, you're not doing that again. So I had picked the Chiefs to win it, and then I was starting to change my pick in the middle of the game, and then, you know, it just, you know, it's just a testament to their drive and their determination, man. And you know, shout out to you know, Damian Williams. Shout out to Mahomes. It was a very good Super Bowl, definitely better than last year's. And they went out, they put it all on the field, and they came out and won. Can't hate on that.
Like, I was really happy for Pat Mahomes, obviously, but even more than that, Marcus, I was happy Andy Reid finally kind of got that monkey off his back, so to speak, and that he finally was able to get a Super Bowl ring. And the only person happy to Andy Reid, I think, was our boy Ronnie out in Houston.
Yeah.
Like, you could probably, like, if Ronnie donated blood the day after the Super Bowl, it would just be like plasma, Hennessy, and menthol. I don't even know if Ronnie smoked, but but talking about Mahomes, Marcus, like, what do you think his trajectory is from here on out? Like, do you think this is the start of a dynasty? Or, you know, because we've seen this before with a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who it looked like he was setting up for 2, 3, maybe even 4 trips to the Super Bowl, and he never really was able to get back for whatever reason. Do you see this as the Chiefs starting a dynasty, or will it be like, you know, a cool story, but ultimately he'll be more Aaron Rodgers than Tom Brady?
It depends. I mean, the fact that they won despite not having a great defense is impressive. So if they continue to build to the defense, I think we could see the Chiefs being serious contenders from, you know, for the next few years. You know, I think from a, you know, individual regular season standpoint, Mahomes is going to continue, if healthy, to put up, you know, numbers that we have not seen from a quarterback at his age. I mean, he's the youngest Super Bowl MVP. He's, I think, the first under 25 to win it. He's only going to get better. And if he continues to have weapons around him, I know Sammy Watkins is sort of talking about maybe sitting out for a year. But even if he does leave, you still have Tyreek Hill. You still have a decent running game led by Damian Williams, and still have Travis Kelce. So that's not a bad, you know, trio right there.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, and I don't want to disrespect Sammy Watkins because he did come up in the clutch in this playoff run. But I think, you know, the way the Chiefs is set up right now, you just need guys that can run. Like, if you get some fast dudes out there, because I think one of their, like, their third receiver this year was somebody that was unheralded. And just because, like, he was fast, he was able to fit right into that system. So I think if you put the weapons around him, and like Chris said, you know, Damian Williams wasn't this big-dollar running back that everybody was talking about before the season, but he was able to fit in. I think, you know, as long as you've got Andy Reid, and maybe if Andy decides to step away in a year or two, Eric Bieniemy can get that spot if he doesn't get another job before then. Like, I think the infrastructure is in place for him to succeed, and he's so good, Chris, that I think we'll be talking about this dude for years. Like, I'm already going on record. I'm not going to go as far as Max Kellerman, because Max be on that stuff sometimes to say that he's the greatest of all time right now. Like, Max, what is you doing? But I think he has the potential to be, like, when it's all said and done, to be a top five, top 10 quarterback.
Right, yeah. And it's just, you know, the one thing I've learned about the NFL is it's really hard to predict a team's trajectory from season to season. But I think with the lineup now, you know, I think the Chiefs are going to be in the conversation for at least the next few years. And I probably at the beginning of the season probably wouldn't have said that about them.
Okay. Well, let's go from the champs to one of your teams, because I want to ask both of you, since I got you on the line here this week, fellas. There's rumors, there's innuendo, there's a scuttlebutt and hearsay going around that a team in your city could have the alleged greatest football player of all time suiting up for them next season. How realistic do you think it is that Tom Brady makes his way out west and suits up for the Chargers?
I'm not buying it. I would see the Raiders being more.
Really?
Yeah, that's a Raiders thing to do. Come on. to mortgage your young quarterback for this old quarterback who's past his prime, who might play two more seasons, and then that's it. Especially first season in Vegas. Not that I think the Raiders will have issues getting fans to come out to that stadium, because I think people are going to flock to Vegas when they see their teams playing the Raiders. But in terms of just the spectacle of it all, Brady in Vegas would be perfect.
That's interesting. I like that take. Chris, what about you? Do you think it's likely that Brady will suit up for the Chargers, or will he be living that Chris Ealy Bloody Mary lifestyle out in Vegas?
I don't know, man. I'm not real intrigued by the prospects of him going to the Chargers. I don't like the Chargers, so it's, you know, one of those things.
I mean, they should never left San Diego. Like, I think that, like, that's apparent.
Yeah. It would be it would be a good marriage if he does go to the Chargers. I could see the Raiders doing that more as well, though. I could see him going to the Raiders, especially with their – is there an inaugural season in Vegas next year? Or?
Yep. So the new stadium in L.A. and Vegas will both be open at the same time.
Okay, yeah, so.
Yeah, like I think – I like what you're setting up with Vegas, Marcus. I think that'd be a real interesting fit for Brady. But there's a part of me that feels like the Chargers are going to be so desperate to make a splash that they're going to, like you said, mortgage the future, overpay for Brady, and ultimately not get a whole lot out of him. Because, you know, like, Tom Brady's great. We can't deny that. But if you just looked at the film from this year, outside of the one game he had where Antonio Brown was actually in his right mind and suited up, Tom Brady looked real average. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he looked, I mean, it felt like every other play, it was him either throwing it away or throwing it down. Like, he was just...
Right.
He didn't look good at all. And granted, yeah, the weapons weren't there for him, but...
Well, yeah, like I was going to say, like, you see how important Gronk was to that team. Without having that, you know, main target, you can't just be dinking and dunking with Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
And that's not going to cut it anymore.
No.
Not in Lamar Jackson's NFL.
Nope.
Let's go from the NFL real quick, fellas, because as I mentioned off the top, today was the opening day for the XFL 2020, a football league not associated in any way with the WWE. Let's make sure we let the people know that. There's no affiliation whatsoever with the WWE. But, A, did you guys check out any of the games today? And B, what were your first impressions? We can start with you, Chris.
I kind of watched a little bit of it. I thought from what I saw, it looked a little bit more fast paced. It was, you know, they interviewed one of the players like right after a touchdown. I thought that was interesting. This thing is gonna suck. I that's just my opinion. I give them the season. And then I'll give them maybe the next season as well. I think right now, like, streaming services and cable seem to be desperate for content. I think that once this kind of desperation wears out, that, you know, everybody will come back down to earth. I just don't see a need for another football. They're like for another football league to exist, there usually has to, for something else to come, there's got to be some, like with AEW, for example, right? With there was a clear issue that a lot of fans were having with the WWE product that was coming out. So a disruptor that says, hey, we'll give fans this, this, and this makes sense. For the XFL, if you're just going to go the regular NFL route with, like, you know, the anthem and all that stuff and, you know, trying to appeal to that same audience, nobody's going to outdo the NFL. And I don't know what the XFL's goal is, because I've heard McMahon said that he wants the XFL to be another NFL. And that's just, if the XFL is going to be a feeder lead to the XFL, then I guess it'll work.
Yeah, I think like that's their only play. Because I do think like I think they're going to get 2 years just based off of the strength of their broadcast package alone. Like, unless they really screw up, I think they're going to get 2 years. But in terms of, like, yeah, what's the shelf life or what's the end game, Marcus? I think it is, like, if they can come to some sort of agreement where the XFL is the step between college and the NFL, and they become more affiliated with the NFL as a minor league, so to speak, I think ultimately that probably would be the best thing for the league and for Vince's investment than to say, we're going to be equal, we're going to be competing against the NFL, because at the end of the day, it's not going to work. Just because, like, I watched the games, a little bit of the DC Defenders game today, and it's the on-field action is better than the original XFL, but it didn't have, for better or for worse, like the sizzle. Mm-hmm. And again, like, you could say that a lot of the stuff they did with the old XFL was over the top and unnecessary, but it did provide a hook. Like, it did get people to watch, at least for those first couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Vince truly thought he was competing with the NFL, then he would put it against the NFL, but he's not dumb. So the fact that this is taking place after football is done, I mean, look, if the XFL wasn't on right now in February and March, what else would be showing on ABC and Fox? I mean, probably nothing that anyone would be probably watching anyways. So I do think they will get...
Marcus, I'm not going to let you sit here and disrespect the Professional Bull Riders League.
PBR?
No. Well, that's kind of my point, too. I think that people just want a break from football when football is done. I don't think they want to watch, you know, second-rate, third-rate football.
It is, that is going to be a good question, though, Marcus, like when the initial ratings come out for this, because I do think, like, this first weekend, there'll be some buzz for it. Mm-hmm. But the question is, like, is there an appetite for post-Super Bowl football, or is the market kind of stuffed and saturated by that point?
But I think when you factor in the market size for football fans, period, like the fact that Super Bowl is always the most watched show and you know, in the year. And even if you got, if you tapped into, let's say, 2 million people a week who are watching this, like, that would still outdraw the NBA most nights. That would outdraw the NHL.
That almost outdraw Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bar now is so low with sports ratings that what might have been, you know, not impressive 20 years ago, now, you know, it would be fine. To your point, I think from what I've seen today, the action is definitely better than 2001.
Yeah.
They're definitely
shout out to MVP and number, like, honorary spot on the black quarterback power ranking, Cardale Jones, out here dropping dimes.
Yes.
Like, DC, that's how bad DC needs a winner. There were MVP chants for Cardale Jones during this damn game.
Boy, that, what happened to him? I mean, yeah, two Ohio State quarterbacks in Washington with Haskins and Cardale.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that the talent pool is better. I think they cut the shtick. They're not, you know, promoting this as a sideshow. If anything, they're probably not promoting it enough.
I was going to say, because they put out the DMX commercial.
Which I thought was hilarious.
That was a
great commercial.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I love that commercial.
Give it to you.
But they, like, to Marcus's point, I think they only started putting it out maybe before the launch.
Yeah, I didn't see it until this week. So
yeah.
But maybe they figured with the NFL, why not wait until Super Bowl is done? But we'll see. I think the fact that the TV deal will help tons. Like, no games on the UPN or whatever other networks had the NFL the first time around.
The announcers aren't going to have to plug homeboys in outer space.
No, and I think on a local team level, if they're smart, and I think we've seen this with the LA club, at least I've noticed, they're really trying to play up the fact that this is an affordable league. You can bring your family. You can, you know, come watch football. And for a lot of families, like, you can't go to NFL games. They're just too expensive. But there is an alternative that you can actually get your kids invested in, and, you know, that's not a bad way to play it.
Let me throw another, I guess, pseudo conspiracy theory out there for you guys, because Chris brought up, I think, a really good point about right now we're in this kind of arms race in streaming services, where everybody's trying to kind of carve out their territory. And this week, I think there was like a rumor out there, and I don't know what percent, if any, of the rumor has any credence, but there was a rumor out there that your man Jeff Bezos might be interested in the WWE. So if that were to take place, even though the WWE and the XFL are two completely separate entities that don't have any common link at all, one could theorize that you could put XFL games on Amazon Prime, and that would be a venue for people to see them games.
I don't know if their TV deal would allow that to happen.
True.
Currently. You know, it's not like the XFL is streaming their games. Like, they're all network television. So the individual properties, you know, you can stream if you got a login to ESPN or whatever. But it's not like they took the approach of trying to target, you know, OTTs that are digital. They decided to just target the major networks.
Yeah, but like they could probably have a inside the XFL on a OTT. I could see that
host Bob Costas, because there's a swerve for you.
Yeah, I mean they're gonna need to promote this league. I don't think they've done the greatest job of promoting this league.
No,
I think they've let people know that it's coming back around. But here's the thing: the XFL name has a lot of taint still attached to it, you know, and stuff like that is not easy to get rid of. And I think they you know, that needs to be a goal to kind of let people know, hey, we're not doing any of the stupid locker room stuff or having Jesse Ventura feud with a coach, and not, because that was nonsense. It was dumb. Yeah. It went from being that first week being okay, this is cool. You see Saragusa in the audience and all that, and it was all right. And then the second week, it turned into a complete joke. You know,
yeah.
And I don't think they've done a good job letting people know that that's not what this league is going to turn into again.
Yeah, I think like some of the rule changes, like with the kickoffs and stuff, and you know we're not kicking extra points and things like that. Those are interesting. The one change that I thought was hilarious, and Chris mentioned it earlier, is now the sideline reporters get interviews with the players after they score a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And in the DC game, I think it was the interception. There was like a 69-yard interception return, which was nice.
Nice.
And the reporter, she's trying to get an interview with the dude in the end zone, and he is paying her no mind. Just, you know, he's celebrating with his boys, and then he turns to run. And my girl, like, I give her credit. She was committed because she kept holding the mic out, and they started running back to the sideline, and she took like about 3 or 4 steps like she was running after them. And then I guess her pride kicked in. She was like, no, I'm not going. I didn't spend 4 years in journalism school for this.
Right.
I turned it the other way.
And then the NFL, whatever is a good idea in the XFL, the NFL is just going to steal it.
Yep.
And, you know, that's what it is.
I mean, that's like, people forget, like, the original XFL is what first gave us the Skycam.
Right, yeah.
I think that's the most interesting aspect of if a partnership were to come through, it would be the NFL to test all this stuff in the XFL.
Yeah.
Sort of like baseball uses the Atlantic League to test a lot of stuff that they want to introduce into the game. I think that's more appealing than the actual player pool, is the actual idea of testing these concepts in football situations.
Yeah, I think that would be very beneficial to the NFL. But real quick on the players, Marcus, do you think we'll see any players from the XFL get a call-up, so to speak, from NXT to the main roster next season?
Oh, I do, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's so many guys you're talking about in terms of a player pool, and a sport as unforgiving and vicious as football, there will be opportunities for these guys to have a shot. So, yeah, I think we'll see several players make the leap.
Yeah, especially if the league adds an extra game like they've been discussing, like within the next season or two. Like, I think that you're going to need bodies, because this is a game that nobody plays all 16.
No.
Right.
So only Peyton Manning, and he may or may not have had help with that, but we're not here to talk about Peyton Manning today. let's see, anything else with football real quick? Oh, it's not a football, but it is kind of associated with the XFL, wink, wink. And that is some wrestling news real quick. Marcus, I don't know if you've ever had the chance to speak with George Berrios.
I have not.
With your dealings, you know, talking to some of the folks in the WWE in the past. But George Berrios, he gone, along with, I forget the other vice president's
Michelle
name.
Wilson.
Michelle Wilson, yes. Both of them are out of the WWE as of this week. Big shakeup, and I guess the network was in part to blame for this, as well as just having creative or philosophical differences with one Vincent Kennedy McMahon. So, Chris, real quick, you can go first. What did you think about that move, you know, dismissing Berrios and Wilson? And do you think it'll have any effect on the product that we see week to week?
I do think it's going to have some effect on the product. I don't know what the extent of it is. I mean, those two, Berrios and Wilson, I thought they were there for a while. They're the reasons why they went PG. And they started with this whole idea of this network. I think it's going to – because I heard a little bit of that conference call the other day.
Yeah.
And they're wanting to sell their pay-per-views to OTTs. I don't know how that's going to work. I don't see how you get people to go back to paying WWE old pay-per-view prices for pay-per-views. I just don't know how that's going to work, but listening to Vince McMahon talk about how AEW, they did at least call AEW competition, but, you know, was trying to dismiss them like they didn't change up their business model because of them. When you're paying, you know, a lot of these dweeb tag teams and wrestlers like $500K a year just so they won't go somewhere else. I mean, but I do think the Berrios and Wilson thing, I do think that that's going to have somewhat of a profound effect as to how they're going to maneuver about going forward.
What about you, Marcus? What did you make of the move, and what effect do you think this has going forward for the WWE?
I thought it was not smart in the sense of that there was no plan B. I mean, it felt like if you're going to make that move, you need to have someone on deck that you can plug in right away, especially if you know that the stockholders, i.e. myself, who freaked out and sold my stocks.
Yeah, that stock took a dip.
Yeah, to the dip. I lost some money.
Marcus was like, young Simba, I guess you're going to JUCO for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Blame Uncle Vince.
I was slowly buying stock thinking that with these TV deals that they would see a bump after the Q4 earnings. And they did see they did have record revenue in Q4, but it did not help at all. So, lesson learned. And I think the most interesting aspect of this past week was the news that Vince and company are thinking about the idea of shopping pay-per-views outside of the network, and what that could look like for the network and where they could end up. And probably a move they should have thought about when they launched the network 6 years ago.
Yep.
Maybe not have put everything on the network. Or at least raise the price and or started the tier system right away. But very curious to see if, and we should know pretty soon, it sounds like, what they do with WrestleMania this year, if they try to sell that off to a network like Fox and, you know, essentially have it on network television while collecting that check. I guess for people, Chris, are you still a network subscriber?
I get to watch the network.
I don't know. Red team, move in. You got confirmation.
I don't spend my money on it. I have a friend who is generous enough to let me use their profile.
Through nefarious means.
Yes.
Yeah. If I thought the network was like, it's just so niche, man. Like, I love wrestling. I really do. But I just don't have the time to get my money's worth, even if it's $10, only $10 a month from that content, you know? Like, most of the stuff on the network I have on VHS somewhere, right? And so it's good. Then I think the network is a great deal at the price it's at, but I just do not think the network idea was a fully vetted thing. I think they kind of I think there was a time where a WWE network, like when like The Rock, Stone Cold era, I think it would have been a lot more viable. And even then, it would have had gone through some ebbs and flows. I just don't think they have a hot product right now. And I don't care what's on there. I don't care how much archive footage you've got. I don't care how many territories and stuff you own tape libraries for. You need a hot product for people to want to spend money on it. You're removing NXT off of it. Like, and I think a lot of people, that was how they watched NXT, was through the network, but now you've put it on USA. Why do you need the network if it's on USA, right? Because, I mean, this is 2020. Everybody has DVR, right? I mean, the network serves no purpose if you're an NXT fan.
Not everyone has cable. That's the thing. You're also facing the number of people who are cutting the cord, you can still get it on the network.
Is NXT the replays strictly on the WWE network, or are they on Hulu also?
I don't know about Hulu, but I know the network gets it, I think, 24 hours later without the commercials.
Yeah, they get it the next day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if that's the thing, but it's like, I think NXT was one of those shows that people liked to watch, as soon as it was put out on the network. I think even a 24-hour delay is kind of like, I don't know. Maybe it'll be fine, but I just I heard talks that they were afraid when the Q4 reports were coming out that they could have dipped below a million subscribers for that thing. And I think the time where they do dip under a million subscribers for the networks is pretty close. I think that is going to happen if something drastically isn't changed.
You mentioned the hot product, and they, I think most wrestling fans would say it's not a hot product at the moment. I think the one way they could sort of alleviate that issue is, and I know they've tried to explore getting rights to other companies, but if you had other independent properties on the network that you could watch, I think that would at least help appease the hardcore fan who might want to watch independent shows that are actually hot compared to watching, WWE.
Well, see, like, I am a network subscriber. I've been a network subscriber for 2 years under each of my 24 separate email addresses. Because if you gonna let me finagle you with a little razzle dazzle, Vince, then finagle you I will. But I think the network is funny, Marcus, because remember when it first came out, it was way ahead of the curve, right?
Oh yeah.
But it feels like they started the wave, or they were ahead of the wave, but now they're kind of like falling back to kind of the middle of the pack. Like, right. Chris, I think it's still a good value for the money. It's a great value for the money, particularly with all the pay-per-views on it right now. But the question is, can you put the horse back in the barn with people getting into the habit of spending 40, 50, 60 bucks a month for these shows? Because honestly, they've got 3, maybe 4 pay-per-views that I think people would actually be interested in paying that dollar amount for. Mm-hmm. The rest of, I think, like, if you're telling me Backlash is something I got to pay 50 bucks for, I'm just going to skip Backlash.
Yeah, I think that's where you need to, if they go that route, at least with the Bid4, you need to have a tier on the network where if you pay $20 a month, you can still get those shows via the network. But if you're someone who's not a subscriber to the network, who wants to watch the Rumble, who doesn't want to deal with the hassle of an email address a month, then you can buy the show. And, you know, I don't think they, I mean, they could try to go back to the old price point, but I think for this to truly work, at least right away, I think the price point needs to come down some.
Okay, been... Marcus, I got to ask you this question because you might know more about the financial viability of the pay-per-views than I do. Is it possible for WWE to just cut out all the pay-per-views except for the Big Four, Big Five, to where you are because with AEW, I've bought in every single one of those pay-per-views, or I've actually gone to the event, and you know, I look forward to buying those pay-per-views because you only get one a quarter. Could they look into doing that and maybe charging like a regular price, and or will a ton of money be lost if they got rid of just all the pay-per-views and kept 4 or 5 per year?
By keep, you mean like getting rid of basically all the B shows?
Yeah, all the worthless shows. All
and
the
like not you mean like not doing them at all, or not having them on the network or pay-per-view?
Just not doing them at all. Just not doing them, and then just having the main core pay-per-views.
I mean, financially they could afford to do it because the TV deal is so lucrative.
Yeah,
I think
and the Saudi deal, like they're set,
right?
But you mentioned the Saudi. I mean, if you count the Big Four plus the 2 Saudi shows, that's 6. I think if they treated the Saudi shows more like a pay per views, then I think they could pull off what you're talking about, Chris. Mm-hmm. I don't think wrestling fans would be that upset, especially if they knew. And I think the issue would be they have not proven the TV to be worth your time. So they would really need to find a way to ramp up the storytelling on television to carry a feud for, you know, like back in the day when you used to get a feud for 2 months before you got the payoff. I don't have the faith that they can do that now. So until they show me that they can actually build to a proper pay-per-view, then I would be concerned about the model. But financially, yeah, they could do it, and they wouldn't probably they would lose some money, but I think it would be actually a better product.
Right, because I think that's the problem with WWE right now is there's too much product. And it's not just too much product, it's too much worthless product. The stuff that I do not feel I'm missing anything if I miss it, right? Like back in the day, when I missed an episode of Raw, I really felt like the sting of that. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm missing Raw. You know, I'd like skip dates to go watch episodes of Raw and stuff like that. That's how big of a fan I was. And I'm just not, and part of that could be because I'm at a different season in my life, but but with products that I like, I still go out of my way. Like every time there's a StarCast, every time a StarCast is in Vegas, I'm going to go to it, right? Yeah. If I can go to an event to see some good wrestling or a product that I believe in, I will do that. And I think WWE, if they just kind of got rid of some of the extra stuff, and not be afraid to fire guys too, especially if you got no plans on them with them in the first place, right? I think there's a lot I would change about that product, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think they're in a position where, like Marcus said, they're financially stable, but they're creatively bankrupt, for lack of a better term. Like, like the actual, and there's so much of it, like you're saying, where like you're always gonna have like that million, that firewall of a million subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many of them are actually paying? How many of them? It'd be hilarious if they were all free trials. Be like,
right? Yeah.
But you got that firewall of a million viewers. That I think the problem is, we've seen it, Marcus. Like the network's been around for a minute now. they really haven't been able to expand the tent. So you've got your hardcores. Yeah, 6 years. So you haven't, right. Like, you've got the hardcores on lock, but yeah. In terms of reaching that bigger audience, I don't know what they can do other than to suddenly find a way to stumble on somebody like an Austin or a Rock, somebody that captures public attention.
Here's the thing about that, though, too. They have this model now where they don't want their wrestlers to become bigger than the brand. Rock and Austin became bigger than the brand and, you know, went on to do great things. Mm-hmm. John Cena and Batista were never bigger than the WWE brand, but they still ended up leaving anyway. So I don't understand this. If Hollywood is an option for these guys, they are going to take that option, man. Cena was never on The Rock's level, and neither was Batista. They were never on Rock or Austin's level, but still, when Hollywood came a-calling, they left, and they have respectable movie careers. And that's in spite of WWE, not because of WWE, right? Yeah. So it's like, I do think they need to relook at that if a guy becomes bigger than the brand, because what I'm afraid is going to happen is that they've not had another Rock in Austin. And right now, they do not have another Cena or Batista. Mm. Pretty soon, I think Roman Reigns and like Seth Rollins is going to be as big as they get, and then 5 years down the line, if they continue on this trajectory, they won't have superstars as big as Reigns and Rollins, right? I think it's going to just keep dipping.
I mean, that might be true, but hey, Marcus, at least we got Fiend and Goldberg to look forward to.
Oh boy, you mentioned the Cena Rock stuff. I'm surprised they have not got involved in more original programming, whether it is some type of, I don't say sitcom, but some type of, you know, a show that would probably be, whether it was, maybe it was taking like Total Divas off E and putting on the network exclusively, or more reality shows focused on the talent where, you might be able to attract a non-hardcore who might want to watch this show. And for them, especially for reality shows, it's pretty cheap content to make and develop. Maybe that's the next step for them, is to figure out how do you sort of follow the Netflix and Amazon model in terms of creating original content that is not in the ring.
Like, and a lot of their, like, in-house stuff is actually real, like, the Chronicles. That stuff's real. Like, they have the talent in the production room to do stuff like that. Like, I saw the trailer for the
Ruthless Aggression. That looks good.
That looks good, yeah. And, like, I wish they would do more stuff like that to kind of take advantage of this platform that you have.
And it's like every show, and WWE has always had a problem with this. They don't have any like inside baseball shows, you know. They don't have any shows that really like take a deep delve into the product and like give real criticism to what's going on in WWE. All their shows have that backdrop of we're WWE and everything is great, right? And nobody gives them, like, when there's UFC shows where, you know, the people do talk critically about UFC.
Yeah.
Same with inside the NBA. Same with baseball shows that I watch. Same with WWE is the only like sport out there that really will not let you like let's talk about this stuff. You know, I think if they had that level of transparency there, they make it easy for things like the Wrestling Observer to exist because they don't want to be a check on themselves. Right. But
you mean you're not impressed with Sam Roberts' hard hitting journalism?
Yeah. So stupid, man. I saw Chris Van Vliet interview Ryan Satin. And Chris Van Vliet was doing his best not to crack up when Satin was trying to say, oh no, our Fox show is completely independent from WWE, and CBB was, you could tell he was trying to hold it in, man. It's like, come on, dude.
Van Vliet was like, not today, Satin.
Yeah.
And on that note, we're going to close out the A block. Good conversation, fellas. But on the other side, we're going to get a little bit serious, a little bit more reflective, because we are going to talk about the passing of the legendary Kobe Bryant. So we'll be talking about that. So don't you guys and girls go anywhere. If you're watching the video, we'll be right here. If you're listening to the audio version of the show, we'll be back in just a moment after this break. But don't you guys go anywhere. Nate, Chris, and Marcus, Kings of Sport, rolls on. Husband and
the daughter. Fuck 24/7, I'm going 24/8. Yeah. Fuck 24/7, I'm going 24/8. That's magic, and he know what it took to be great. 41-5 rings, and it still ain't adding up. What? Was in L.A. when that happened, hit boy, track it up. God, send me a sign, I'm outside looking up.
I was courtside when you scored 60. Now you in heaven with my nigga from the 60s. Black Mamba, neighborhood Nipsey. That's the type of love you throw and it come back like a frisbee. Kobe with the fro, Kobe with the lineup. Torn Achilles limping to the free throw line, yup. I cherish the moments I seen you go at Brian. But my favorite moment seeing you jumping in Shaq's arms. Yeah, ain't no realer than that. Turn to a blank page, Kobe could fill it with stats. As I shed tears, chugging this Hennessy back. What you doing, people dying, God ain't sending them back.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Nate, Marcus, and Chris here in segment four. Segment four is usually where we have our repository of ratchetness. We talk about the crazy things going on in the world of sports, pop culture, and entertainment. But instead of ratchetness this week, we are reflective. Instead of craziness this week, we are going to commiserate about the passing of a legendary figure in sports and pop culture. He is somebody who I don't know if we knew the reach that this person had until he was gone. So for those of you listening and watching, like by the time you get this show, it will be almost exactly 3 weeks to the day, or maybe a little bit longer, again, depending on when you listen to it, to the day where Kobe Bryant, legendary Los Angeles Laker, his daughter Gianna, and seven others were killed in a helicopter accident, a helicopter crash. And in the weeks that have followed, we've just seen this outpouring of love from within the basketball community and certainly without as well. So I guess where I want to start, guys, is where were you when you first heard the news about what had happened with Kobe and these and his daughter and these seven other folks? And what was kind of your immediate reaction? And Chris, I know we've joked on the show before that you were the prime minister of Kobe Stan, but now that it is an honored and revered title, sir. So how did you feel? Like, when did you first hear about Kobe, and how did you feel?
Okay, so I was at home with my girlfriend, and then someone sent me a text message in the group message, and they said that, hey, I just heard Kobe died. And I thought it was ridiculous. I was in denial, not because I'm the kind of person that's in denial about things, but I looked out the window that day, and it was super, super cloudy outside. And I remember telling my girlfriend, yeah, this is, you know, no helicopter's going to be flying in this thick fog. And sure enough, you know, about an hour later, it start like just the news just start pouring in, and I froze. That like there was like I was like a roller coaster of just real just sad, man. I was, because like Kobe was one of those guys that I used to live vicariously through, right? Like every like point in my high school life to now, I kind of could like think of, like I could like put next to Kobe's life as, oh, this is what I was going through then, right? I was right. in high school right. when, you know, Kobe was playing with Eddie Jones and playing with Nick Van Exel and Sabalas and all those cats. I was you know, a college freshman when Kobe and the Lakers won the first of the three NBA titles and all this other stuff. And then, you know, after he retired, he won an Oscar, and I had just gotten all at my job full time, you know, just things like that. And it was like, and I guess the hardest part that I have gone through and that I'm still going through is just every death that I've ever went through, whether it's the person that I know in real life or somebody that I kind of know from afar, I've always been able to like make sense of it at some level, like whether it be someone like a Prince or Michael Jackson or something mm-hmm. like that. While the deaths are sad, it's like you there is an element of, you know, if this person didn't do this that much, then maybe, you know, they'd be around a little bit longer. They were going like 1,000 miles an hour, and that's why it happened. With Kobe, it was like, you know, this dude, like, if you, he's a guy that, you know, if he didn't die in that helicopter crash, he would probably be living well into his 80s or 90s, right? And that was just kind of like, you know, and I think about the daughter, I think about the seven other people, and it was just, everything about it was sad. And like, living in LA, it's really hard to, I've only had like one or two Kobe Bryant encounters. I remember one of them where I made fun of the Adidas. This was after he had already got the contract at Nike. I was like, Kobe, man, them shoes are bad or something. And he goes, man, I'm with Nike now. He, you know, said something like that, or shut up or something. And that was just like, and everybody I know has some kind, in the city of Los Angeles, has some kind of connection to Kobe. Like, I know people that used to know Kobe, right? And that's kind of, and you know, like that coach, for example. Kobe was cool with the coaches at the college that I work at, Ventura College. It's just, you know, I'm still processing it, but you know, it's good to have like these memories, I guess.
What about you, Marcus? Like, when you first heard the news, how did you feel, and how did you process that?
I was home. It was a Sunday, and to Chris's point, woke up that morning and noticed the fog, the weather. I mean, that's the first foggy day it's been all season. So that caught my attention. And then about 10:30 or so, I saw a story about a helicopter crash in Calabasas, and this is before Kobe got attached to it. And, you know, sadly, it's one of those things where, like, you see it and it's sad, but it's sort of like, all right, it's a helicopter crash, you know? And then an hour later, I'm on my computer, and my brother sends me the TMZ story. And I can see the URL that says, you know, Kobe Bryant has died. And I click on it, and I was like, nah, this can't be right. And I'm on Twitter, and I'm sort of looking at the real-time response to it, and it started off very much so, like, people did not want to acknowledge it. People did not want to shared the story, it was a lot of like, nah, like, can't be, or stuff of that nature. And you could really see people trying to process what they had just read. And then, you know, the tweets started coming in of like, please don't let this be true. And it sort of went from there. I think, especially for anyone who's from LA, the impact of Kobe, you know, I for the longest I thought we would see this type of reaction around Magic, especially considering Magic's, the way Magic, his career was abruptly ended because of HIV. And at the time, in, you know, 91, we didn't know really that he would still be with us. And I thought, you know, God forbid something happened to Magic unexpectedly, like, we would see this outpouring for him. But I was not expecting the impact, not only across Los Angeles, but across the world, that he's made sort of as a basketball player. And considering, like, look, like, and we'll probably talk about this in a bit, he's got some history that if what happened in Eagle happened in 2020, this would be a different conversation around Kobe Bryant if he was still alive. I think he would not have had the benefit of the doubt, sadly, even if he was not found guilty. I think just the culture we're in now, it would have been a different situation. But because it happened in 2003, and, you know, to his credit, he had not been involved in anything else since then. And, you know, because he was such a transcendent figure on the court, that I think a lot of that stuff gets overlooked. So, so yeah, I was home, and sort of to KME's point about having a Kobe Bryant story, I first met Kobe when he was, I guess it was 2 months after, or maybe a month after he was drafted by the Lakers. He was at this benefit dinner that the Magic Johnson Foundation put on every year. And he was, I guess he was 18 at the time, maybe. And I had brought a basketball card that he signed. He was sort of, you know, kept to himself very much. Like, this was before he was like Kobe Bryant. He was just this high school rookie that was coming to LA, and, you know, it was pretty personal.
Still had the nappy fro.
Yeah. He was, you know, he signed this card for me, and, I think that is the closest I've ever have been to Kobe since then would be the 2010 finals that I covered as media. And just to sort of study Kobe's mannerisms, like, during press conferences and stuff, like, that entire series, he just had this look on his face. Like, he was just, and maybe this was started like the beginning of the Mamba mentality stuff, but he was just zoned in where he didn't get too high, he didn't get too low after wins and losses. And then I think after game 7, which the Lakers won that series, he finally got to sort of let loose and show this other side of Kobe. And if I remember correctly, his family was a part of that press conference after they won. So just a tragic story all around.
Yeah, for me, like, I heard about it, I want to say, like, probably around noon, my time. You know, I was watching MSNBC because they were, you know, doing a lot of the impeachment stuff. And I was trying to keep up with that just in case Chris and I come back with a 2020 twin in the near future, so we can talk about that. And so I'm watching, you know, I'm kind of zoning in and out, you know, working on some podcast stuff and keeping an eye on the political conversation. And then all of a sudden they're like, you know, special report, you know, Kobe Bryant killed in a crash. And I'm like, I'm seeing it, but I'm not, like you said, I'm not processing it. I'm like, nah, it must mean he just was in a crash. Like, he didn't die though. You know, he was just in a crash. And then the news, like you said, started to trickle out, and the reports got more defined, and when I think the moment, like, because I was just kind of stunned a bit, I guess, when it dawned on me, like, oh, this is real, Kobe's dead. The gut punch though came when they revealed that Gianna was on the helicopter.
Yes,
that's what got me, because it was like, oh man, like, not only is this, like you said, this pop culture figure, particularly when you talk about Los Angeles and the landscape of that community. But this is somebody that transcended just sports. You know, this is somebody that resonated in all corners. This is somebody that's won an Oscar. You know, this is somebody that was doing things for the kids. And to find out that his daughter was with him on this trip and that she was dead too, like before she even got a chance to really become who she was going to be. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's when it just hit me. And then from there, I just, you know, kind of turned on ESPN and just watched kind of the parade of individuals, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Gary Payton, Rick Fox, people that played with Kobe, get on and just kind of talk about their memories of him. And so, yeah, I think the closest comparison that I can bring to Kobe, and Chris brought up the name, was back when Prince died. And you felt kind of this shared communal sense of loss online from people that, you know, may have met the man before or people that have only seen them from the opposite end of a TV screen. Like, everybody, it feels like, was touched by the death of Prince and out of death of Kobe. And, like, I think the saddest thing for me, because, you know, full disclosure, like, and Chris and I have debated this for years, probably ever since I've known Chris, about, you know, where Kobe kind of ranks amongst the all-time greats. And part of my ranking of Kobe in comparison to people like a Tim Duncan or LeBron James, part of that was a personal thing, right? Because Kobe wasn't for everybody when he was playing. You know, just the way he carried himself on court, his demeanor, you know, and there was a time where you were either a Shaq guy or a Kobe guy in terms of fandom. And I was 100% a Shaq dude, you know what I'm saying? So I don't think I fully appreciated the greatness of Kobe on the court, even though I knew he was a great player. I don't think I fully gave him his due. But I think when I became like a dyed-in-the-wool Kobe fan, though, it was either like the last year or close to it, maybe the year before of his playing career, where we started to see old man Kobe start to develop. And
5 minutes.
All right, sir. I'll do that.
All right. Thank you. Sorry about that.
And they tell you, you ain't got to go home, but you got to get the hell out of here, Chris.
Kind of had to, yeah. Smates.
It was when he did the Kobe system commercials.
Right. Those are great.
And he's like, you know, to attain your highest goal, you must be a different animal and the same beast. And I'm like, Kobe's got a sense of humor that he never really showed during his playing, you know, in the prime of his playing career. And then when he writes the children, not writes the children's book, but when he does the movie, Dear Basketball, and when he takes an active role in women's basketball, which is something you didn't see a lot of the NBA players do. Like, just seeing this guy, and when he was doing the stuff for ESPN, where he was giving his perspective on the game, like seeing Kobe kind of mature into this younger elder statesman of the game was cool. And it was like, oh man, this, like, I think everything was finally starting to kind of coalesce for Kobe. And it's like, yeah, he's getting it. And he's getting ready to take that next step and be even more impactful off the court than he was on the court. And to have that kind of cut down, I think that's what resonated with me, Chris.
Right, yeah. And you see, like all these – like, Kobe was just somebody I expected to be around, you know, because when you look at the NBA legends – who played when we were kids that are still here. You know, you look at your Magic Johnsons, your Michael Jordans, Larry Bird, and they're all doing different things. And Kobe seemed like he really made peace with the game of basketball. And, like, naive enough for me to think, but this is, like, I never really thought about Kobe being in a helicopter crash or any kind of crash of any matter, but I just assumed if something like that were to happen to Kobe, he'd get up and walk away, you know, just like, because that's just who he was to me. He was just this larger than life figure. He was only a couple years older than me, but it was like, you know, this was a dude that I wanted to be like, you know, when he was going through the stuff with in Eagle Rock. Even during that time, I remember just thinking, you know, what is this? You know, because it was just, that was just not, you know, that, like, that's not who I had deified, right? And then to see him have his back and forths with Shax and the city, the way that went down too, it was like, you did have a lot of people in this shit in the city that were Shaq riders. I was 100% a Kobe rider. Part of that is because he was the one that was still a Laker and Shaq wasn't. So if it stayed the other way, I would have been a Shaq rider if he was the one that stayed a Laker, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, Kobe was just, for me, he was just, and even towards the end of his career, I gave Kobe some criticism about him not really doing what needed to be done for the Lakers to get some more rings. But I kind of, like, now with different eyes, I kind of look at it like he was trying, in those last few years of his playing career, he was trying to set up the next level of his career. I think Kobe was one of those guys that was always thinking ahead. And I think Kobe, even though he played basketball most of his life, I think he always knew that there was something to be done after he played basketball, right?
Yeah.
And you don't really see that from a lot of players, you know. So a lot of players you see either try to go back to playing basketball or get an analyst job, or, you know, work for ESPN, try to get into coaching. Kobe was never going to be happy doing that stuff. Everything he wanted to do after basketball was off the court, right?
Yeah, like, really the only connection he had with basketball was, and again, this is why it was still resonant to me, Marcus, was with his daughter Gianna.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we got the echo again. Oh, Stripe.
hey, we look, in honor of Kobe, we gonna play through the echo, Mamba mentality.
Yes.
Plus, Chris is about to get kicked to the curb by the maid, so we. but real quick, Marcus, because you did bring up Eagle, Colorado.
Yes.
And a lot of the conversation this week has been about the Gail King, Lisa Leslie interview. What did you make of that as a journalist, and also as, you know, a fan of the Lakers and a fan of Kobe?
I did not have issue with the interview. You know, the questions were fair. Gail was not attacking Lisa Leslie with the questions. I think, and Gail pointed this out, that the interview was taken out of context, and this one clip was circulated without watching the whole thing. Gail was upset about that with CBS, but, you know, that's sort of how the internet works. You flip out a teaser to tease the bigger thing. So yep. I don't agree with her there. But the reaction that she has received is just, it tells you what you need to know about how people feel about black women, that she is getting attacked at this point. And that includes Snoop, that includes 50 Cent, whoever else went after her. Even the LeBron tweet I thought was out of line. I just feel like people are so, and I think some of it's still the grieving process. But people,
I was going to say, Marcus, do you think there's any validity to the thing that some people have brought up, that maybe this is just too soon for that type of interview?
I mean, if not now, then when? You know, like it's part of his legacy.
The Snoop thing, I'm not defending Snoop, but he was friends with Kobe Bryant. It is a different level when you are friends with somebody. This Vanessa Bryant and Kobe Bryant met on the set of an Eastsiders video, right? Snoop gave this guy a car when, you know, he retired from the game of basketball, they were more than just casual friends with each other. So I don't agree with him what he said like that, but I don't think this was another Snoop Dogg, you know, gin and juice kind of those days kind of thing. I think he was genuinely hurt by that. From the journalistic perspective, because I've had to make those decisions as well, because, you know, when I was at USC, if I was going to interview somebody, it really depended on, like, if it was a story at the moment, right? Mm. Like, for example, I had the chance to interview Raven Simone, and right as I was about to interview her, the story of her being with another woman came out, and it was circulating and all that stuff. And, you know, you ask the person, hey, can we talk about this in the interview? Because I don't want to ambush them, but I'm good. But I did ask, hey, can I talk about this in the interview? And she was cool with it. If she said she didn't want to talk about that, I would have said, okay, that's fine. We cannot do this interview at this time, because this is a question people want to know the answer to. And if I ask you this question, you know, if I don't ask you this question, then I lose my credibility as a journalist, right? And the way I look at the Gayle King stuff is the timeliness of it. I don't think that anybody would have put Gayle King's feet to the fire had she not asked that question when she asked it. I don't think people would have been like, hey, why didn't you ask about Eagle Rock, Colorado, or whatever? I really don't think that would have happened. In Gayle King's defense, I understand why she would feel the need to maybe ask that and get it out the way. Mm-hmm. I know how networks work, and they're going to do stuff like that. They're going to, you know, they're going to do the most salacious thing they can do. Like, I'm doing a show with my episode of Power Dynamics where we're going to talk about it from every single angle. And I do think there were some people, like, as bad as I didn't like what Snoop Dogg said about Gayle King, but if I was, like, personal friends with somebody, like, if it was, like, one of you guys that had happened to, and I see somebody and I think that they're asking a clout chasing question, I would get mad. I don't know if I'd go as far as Snoop did. I think the other people, like, you know, Boosie and other folks, were just there were some obvious clout chasers, whether you were on the side of Kobe or not. You have Boosie, you have 50, you had Evan Rachel Wood on the other side of that. It's one of those, like I said, it's one of those things. Me personally, I don't think that would have been a question I would have asked at that time. I can understand the argument for asking it. Yeah, I just don't think I would have done it.
And I think, like, the issue with this, and Marcus brought it up, like, there's so much tied into this.
Mm-hmm.
We've got people grieving, right? About the passing of Kobe and his daughter.
Yeah.
But you've also got, like, we live in this culture where people are more aware of sexual abuse and things like that.
Right. And it's a layered topic too, because you do ask yourself the question, what if Kobe did sexually assault this girl? That is a valid question to ask. Another valid question to ask, especially if you were a black man in this country, could this girl have made this whole thing up? Because historically speaking, that has happened to black men in this country with white women. So I don't think I think both questions are valid. And now we're at a point, unless the girl, you know, comes out and they do like a surviving Kobe type of thing or something, we're kind of left with this part of him that's going to never, I don't think it's going to ever be fully satisfied, the answer for either side, right?
Well, it's part of the, it's not the first sentence, Marcus, but it is part of the legacy, right? Because there's a reason why Kobe had number 8 and number 24. So it is kind of tied in where you, I think you have to address it, but it can't be the focus of your story on Kobe.
It's definitely in the first paragraph. It's not the lead sentence, but it's in the first paragraph. Tammy, you would not say what Snoop said on Twitter. Shut up.
I never said that.
The fact that you're even pausing, you're like,
Look, make no mistake about it. I'm way past that part of my life, but there is a time where I would have reacted with that kind of vitriol. I've gotten to a place where I'm not that anymore. But if I'm friends with somebody and I feel that they've just died and they left and their daughter died with them, and what was my friend thinking as that plane was crashing down while he's in there with his daughter, and now he's got this wife who I'm part of the reason why they met each other, and she's got these three daughters to look after. I would feel a type of way about that if I felt that Gayle King, and I don't think this is how Gayle King is, and I've got friends on my feed that are talking crap about her. I think Michael Eric Dyson stated it perfectly. I would feel a way if I felt somebody was clout chasing. I really would. And I'm not saying Gayle King was clout chasing, but I could understand that thought process. I've got to be 100% honest.
I would just say this. If it was a white man or a white woman asking the same question, there would be a lot more support for that journalist than currently.
I don't think so. I don't think so because that Washington Post journal, Abigail Disney, here's the thing, Gayle King, I think with Gayle King, people, especially from the black community, have different standards for her than they are going to have for Abigail Disney. Evan Rachel Wood, the actress girl, nobody, and she did get a lot of, she actually had to block her Twitter account. She got a lot of stuff from it, but I think that, you know, this is the question. Gayle has to live with her decision for better or for worse. And this is how people are, man. I don't think it's fair, but this is how people are. This is what they do.
I'm glad she did her job and asked the question. And to your point about the black community, we're also the same community that supports R. Kelly, that supports Chris Brown. Like, I think we have a different standard when it comes to the moral ground of a character of a person. So I'm not surprised that, you know, people are so hard on Kobe in terms of defending him. I also feel like we need to do better in terms of how we respond to people who might want to ask questions. It's not like I thought Gayle's question did not come off as criticizing Kobe, judging Kobe, questioning Kobe. The question was around, as a WNBA player, how do you continue? How did you continue to support Kobe knowing all of these allegations? I think that is a fair question.
That part of the question is fair, but she did provide some kickback too, right? She said,
I think she just wanted to clarify that the fact, you know, he was not found guilty, that the case never reached trial. I think she was just trying to make sure that.
But you wouldn't have known. You wouldn't have known that, though. She said, you wouldn't have known he was a abuser or harasser and stuff. I mean, she was searching for something with that question, you know.
And I think, part of it, Marcus, that you're saying, dude, it's a double-sided coin, which all coins are double-sided, but. I think the black community tends to overcompensate because we know how society is.
Yeah.
And so when people like R. Kelly or Bill Cosby or Kobe in this instance, I think like we overprotect because we know the historical way that society in the legal system, the way that society and the media has kind of portrayed black people that get in trouble. And it's like this weird thing that it's almost like an overcorrection for sins of the past.
I'm going to say this. I don't necessarily think it's fair to put Kobe Bryant in the conversation with a Bill Cosby and a Chris Brown and people like that. I don't. I think that, and I think the sect of black people who defend Bill Cosby and who defend Chris Brown's and who defend R. Kelly are not every, I don't think it's the general.
It's not the majority, but it's more than you would expect. I would say that.
Right. I'll agree with that. I'll co-sign on that part, but I think white people were getting pissed at Evan Rachel Wood and, you know, Gayle King for that stuff. It wasn't just black people that were offended by it. That's why she offered the apology. It was everybody. It wasn't just black people. Black people, I will say that it was black people that took it to a level that it should not have gone to. Mm. But I don't think it was – I think she got backlash from every facet of society for that question. And I do think it was a fair question. I personally don't know how I would have broached it. I don't think I would have asked that question, but
I'll say this. As a journalist who especially felt like the last 4 years has been under attack in terms of the bigger journalist bubble because of the president, I think it's really interesting and a little scary to me that there's this much vitriol for someone who did their job. And I think part of that is because of the last 4 years where the media has been attacked on a daily basis by the person who runs the country.
Yeah, we got to respect our black women. We can't be calling them names like that, even if they say something or do something that we think is out of pocket. There's better ways of handling it. You kind of give credence to, you know, her pushing back harder again. And I'm not saying Gayle King is a sweet lady. I don't think she is out there. And I really do think she was coming from a place where she wanted to maintain her journalistic credibility because she does stand in front of a lot of those, you know, sexual assault issues and stuff like that. Yeah. For her particularly, I could actually see why she would want to ask that question, you know, because she's not some Johnny come lately.
Yeah, she did the R. Kelly interview, which everyone seems to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I will say this, Chris. Mm-hmm. If God forbid I should perish in a terrible accident, and Conrad Thompson or Ryan Satin come at me sideways in the perception of the people, I give you permission to call him a dog-headed bitch.
Right.
But I think we're gonna leave it. We're gonna leave it there. Like that's a good conversation, man. Like I think we could literally kind of be parsing that for a minute just because it's so interconnected with fame and celebrity culture and the way, like Marcus said, the media has been under attack from the president the last 4 years. Then you mix in sex and race, like it's on the fault line of a lot of different issues. And I think that's why it's kind of resonated this week.
Yeah.
So before we get out of here, you know, we'd had these Los Angeles Snickers, Lakers.
Yeah, that too.
Chris, where can the people check you out? Where can they hear more of your thoughts on politics or race or things that's going on in the country? Where can they find you, brother?
Okay, well, on Twitter, I'm KMEZDoesIt. And then I'm doing new – I have taken a – break from my podcast, but I'm doing new episodes of Power Dynamics with KME. And the first episode, we're going to be talking about Kobe Bryant ad nauseum, and we're definitely going to be talking about, you know, Gayle King, Evan Rachel Wood, Abigail Disney. We're going to be talking about 50 Cent, R. Kelly, all these different elements to these conversations. Like I said, is it fair to compare to put Kobe Bryant in the conversation with a Bill Cosby or R. Kelly and all that stuff? We're dissecting this, and we'll probably spend about an hour on it, and I'm looking forward to that. And then just whatever we have coming down the pike too. Okay. So just look for me.
And real quick, before we get out of here, how was the atmosphere that night at Staples Center during the tribute?
Oh, it was sad, man. It was like, you know, people were trying to get into it, and they were, you know, a bunch of Kobe chants broke out. But, you know, seeing all that stuff on screen, just, you know, seeing pictures of the other families, it really did something to me. I'm kind of glad that I went, because I really wasn't doing a whole lot that week, because I just didn't feel like it. But my girlfriend had already bought the tickets to the game. So I felt that, you know, that was kind of part of my healing process, was going to that game. And I think for a lot of people, that was a part of their healing process, because I was at a point that week where I started feeling bad if I was enjoying something, right? Like if I was eating a donut or something and I thought it tasted good, I was like feeling bad about that because of this whole situation with these families and stuff. Like, so the game was very therapeutic for me. And even though we lost, it was still kind of like the first step to me, for me personally, because I was just such a fan, to get back to a state of normalcy.
Yeah, I was watching that, Marcus, and I was good for most of the game until they brought out Wiz Khalifa and Charlie to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See you again. That's what got me, though.
Wiz Khalifa,
and then Usher singing Amazing Grace kind of got me, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Usher's Amazing Grace was good, too. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Wow. You get ready for the memorial. That's in a couple weeks, the 24th.
Is it going to be at Staples?
Yes, at Staples.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's gonna be something. Marcus, where can the people hear from you? I know you probably got some interesting things going on with the good people over at Yahoo. Let the people know where they can find you.
You can find me on social media at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
And you can find me on Twitter, Cospod, KOS_POD. You can also check me out on the Black Lightning Podcast at DCTV Podcast. You can also check me out on Post Wrestling, Rocky Maivia Picture Show, coming back this month with The Rock in Fast Five. So that should be a fun review for the people.
And congrats again to Waiting for getting engaged.
Oh, yeah.
Getting married.
Yeah, Waiting about to jump the broom.
Yes.
I don't know if he understands the...
Probably not.
Cultural significance for that.
You guys are giving my girlfriend ideas, man.
So, Chris, your lady's looking at you like Goldberg looked at The Fiend. You're next.
Yes. Yes, I'm getting it all.
Except Tammy's not saying, she's not saying let me
she's
in.
She's feeling it. Yeah.
And Chris is just looking back at her. Wowie, yowie.
Yeah. Not coming up with a good idea, a good excuse as to why we haven't gotten married yet, or I haven't proposed.
So. How long have you guys been?
I'll get that straight. Yeah.
How long has it been, Jamie?
It's been 3 years now.
Oh, man.
So.
You're on the clock, dude.
Yeah,
I know.
I mean, he like Chris trying to take it back to the old days when black folks just stay together for 15 years.
Yeah,
and, the kids that graduated high school, I guess we can get married.
Yeah, I've been trying, man. I have, and yeah, it's just, yeah, nah. That's just not an argument.
Breaking news.
Yeah, you heard it here first on the Kings of Sports.
Not happening.
Oh,
take your time,
yeah, yeah.
Take your time.
Yeah, the next time we talk to KME, he's gonna be hitched.
Yeah. My girlfriend's probably listening to this too, so your time is coming, baby, I promise.
Hey, he said it on the podcast, that's legally binding.
Yep.
But yeah, good conversation, good show this week. We had some fun talking about the Super Bowl. We got a little serious talking about Kobe, and I hope you guys and girls out there enjoyed the show this week. We'll be back maybe in 2 weeks. We'll see. We'll play it by ear.
I hope so.
So we'll see. When we come back, we'll let you know we're coming back. But yeah, so happy Black History Month in case we don't talk to you again until March.
No, we will. We will get this right.
But yeah, so that's been it. We'll be back next time for an all-new episode of the world's most dangerous sports show, the Kings of Sport podcast. So, for Professor Chris Ely out there in Vegas, who is getting ready to head to the blackjack table. For Marcus Vandenberg, who's getting ready to head back to doing some work. I am the guy, Father Nate Milton, who is headed to the dinner table. And I'm going to leave you with this, in the words of LeBron James. Mamba out, but not forgotten. Because you've been down with the Kings.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began. Oh, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. When I see you again.
Damn, who knew? All the planes we flew, good things we've been through. Then I'll be standing right here talking to you about another path. I know we love to hit the road and laugh, but something told me that it wouldn't last. Had to switch up, look at things different, see the bigger picture. Those were the days, hard work forever pays. Now I see you in a better place. See you in a better place. How can we not talk about family when family's all that we got? Everything I would do, you were standing there by my side. And now you gon' be with me for the last ride.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began. Oh, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again.
Tell you.
When I see you again.
You both go out your way and the vibe is feeling strong and what's small turn to a friendship turn to a bond and that bond will never be broken, the love will never get lost. And when brotherhood come first, then the line will never be crossed. Established it on our own when that line had to be drawn, and that line is what we reach, so remember me when I'm gone. Can we not talk about family when family's all that we got? Everything I went through, you were standing there by my side. And now you gon' be with me for the last ride.
Let the light guide your way. Yeah. Hold every memory as you go. And every road you take will always lead you. It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began. Oh, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. When I see you again.
that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's bad. D-A-double-D-Y, facts, facts.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to leave it all on the mat. Because that's what I do when I get it done so I can do it. Yeah!
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?